This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
For all voices, this is Joy.
It's Saturday, the 20th of April. This is Saturday Magazine. You're with Macca and with Paul. And Macca, we have our first guest.
We do, Paul. Thank you. Dennis Mueller, Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. And we've spoken to Dennis before. Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Good, Macca. How are you?
Look, I'm pretty good. And I, when I was, looking at, this subject, we're going to talk about, Lehman versus Channel 10, the defamation trial, or the Omni shambles, as Justice Lee called it. But I want to start off Channel 10 and Channel 7, and particularly Channel 7's been in the news of late. I'm actually surprised, perhaps it shows my viewing habits, but I don't think I've watched anything on Channel 7 for probably 5 or 6 years. Other people watch Channel 7?
Well, sufficient to keep the place afloat.
I suppose.
Yeah. I don't know beyond that.
Yeah, it's interesting. But look, this trial, it goes right to the heart of the reputation of journalism in Australia, doesn't it, Dennis? Because we saw so many components of this trial that were disturbing and disappointing about the way that some journalists conduct their craft in Australia. Is that fair, or am I being too harsh?
Oh, you're not being harsh enough. I think it was squalid, some of the yes. Some of the information that came out as allegations by Mr. Auerbach, which Channel 7 denied, but which was supported by receipts and invoices, and evidence which was not contradicted by Mr. Lehman's counsel. So I think there's some force to those allegations about the use of Channel 7 money to buy Mr. Lehman cocaine and the services of prostitutes. So it was about as gross as anything I've ever seen in journalism.
Dennis, a quick question. Do you reckon that had an overbearing influence on the judge's final review?
No, I don't think that had much influence at all. In fact, in his judgment, he describes it as the spotlight detour. That's the subheading over that section of his judgment. So I think what it did was it probably played into the judge's assessment of Mr. Lehman's credibility, which, of course, was a central issue in the trial, because with all sexual offences, you've usually got one person's word against another. Yeah. So his credibility was very important. I think it played into his assessment of Mr. Lehman's credibility, but I don't think beyond that it had very much influence at all.
Because I think, the long-running shambles that whole case was, and I wonder, Dennis, the organisations that employ journalists, or in particular some of the journalists that really didn't come out of this case very well, do you think it's time for them to pause and reflect and change, or are they just going to keep doing what they're doing? Because I haven't seen any real contrition or apology or anything from those organisations or from the journalists.
No, well, you see, so long as it continues to be a viable business model, and so long as there is no effective accountability mechanism, which there isn't, then they'll just go on as before. One of the things we don't have in Australia, we used to have, but it was repealed, we no longer have a fit and proper person test for the holding of a broadcasting license. Mm. And I think that's a profound weakness, because if we did, there would be a means of holding the license holders, which was Channel 7 and Channel 10 in this case, to account not just for legal breaches, but for ethical breaches. And so I think it's the lack of a fit and proper person test that means that we're just going to see commercial television channels go on doing whatever they think they need to do in order to get a story. But I should, I think, focus it a bit more sharply on those Sunday night current affairs programs.
Yes.
They're the ones, because, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of television news reporters. They regard those programs as what they call the dark side. I think that they are almost a unique species within journalism. And, of course, the problem is that their behavior, gross as it often is, drags down the reputation of the whole profession.
So an organization, you know, a media outlet that sanctions this sort of journalistic behavior on the basis of that it generates views, it generates clicks, you know, that pays, you know, makes the advertising worthwhile. Sure, the journalists that are not subscribing to what are, you know, the ethics of journalism, but also the media outlet, they're saying, well, actually, those ethics don't matter. All that matters is viewers and dollars. And the fact that it's actually not news, we've made it up, that's okay. I mean, that's quite disturbing, really.
It's profoundly disturbing, and it comes back again to the matter of accountability. There is no effective accountability mechanism. There's a thing called the Australian Communications and Media Authority, which is the licensing body. Now, they supervise the preparation of the codes of conduct for broadcast, for radio and television, the three separate codes. But the problem is that the industry writes the codes and the ACMA simply rubber stamps them, and you can drive a truck through them. You can drive a truck through these codes. They basically are extremely weak and very, very much lacking in detail. And so the industry's basically got the regulator where it wants it. And we have Paul Keating, thank for this, going right back, because there used to be a thing called the Broadcasting Tribunal and the Broadcasting Authority. They had real teeth. This ACMA organization is what's called a co-regulator. So basically, they regulate in partnership, if you like, with the broadcast industry. Well, that's no sort of regulation at all. And so this is the fundamental
question. And, you know, Joy, we're regulated by ACMA. You know, the reality is that I remember the days of the Broadcasting Tribunal and the fit and proper person test and all of that. And I wonder, is it the political reality that governments, both state and federal and of all colours, are actually scared of holding media organisations to account in case, you know, the guns get turned on them, no pun intended there?
Oh, I think that's always been a problem, right from the word go, right from the introduction of radio broadcasting. Politicians were terrified of radio broadcasting because they realized that it could reach people who couldn't read, for example. I mean, it could reach the entire population, and it would reach them by means of what was thought of in the 1920s as kind of magic. The magic of wireless. So they've always been terrified of the power of the electronic media in particular, but also newspapers. And that was one of the reasons why they introduced the licensing system, partly also to keep order on the frequency spectrum so you weren't all yelling over each other's frequencies. But one of the big motivations for the politicians was to try to find some way of exerting control over them. Well, that was watered down over time, and of course in the great deregulation frenzy of the 1990s, the regulation was watered down even more. So we finish up now with a situation in which there's no effective regulation at all, really.
So, Dennis, the only thing that's suffering here is the standard of journalism and the ability of the public to make sense of what is true and what is not true. Do you think now there is a moment in time to say the journalists who are reputable, who do follow a code of conduct, and who are ethical, should actually badge themselves with, you know, a journalism badge to say, actually, I am an authorised person, pretty much like a lawyer would have to provide details to say they're qualified, or a dentist would have to say they're qualified. Do you think journalism as a profession needs to up its game and have a professional body that true journalists can join?
Well, I think the basic idea is a good one, but you have to be careful that we don't introduce a system of registration of journalists and of licensing of journalists, because that we've been down that track, or some rough equivalent of it, many centuries ago in England with the licensing of the press. Yes. And we've got away from that. I don't think we can have a system of licensing in the same way we do for lawyers and dentists. But I think the creation of an independent professional body where journalists paid to join, but then did have a kind of accreditation as members of that organisation, would be a very good thing, yes.
I think it also helped we talked on this on Saturday Magazine before. It also helps when you think you've got fake news or not. If you had a reputable journalist who you knew was following a code of conduct, you could then rely more heavily on the stuff that you ingested, whether it be through digital media or reading, per se.
Yeah, well, I think there's two sides. So one is that, the individual journalist. The other is the organization that the journalist is working for. The reputable end of the journalism spectrum, you know, the nine newspapers, The Guardian, the ABC, SBS, and so on, they do some very good journalism, and they are trying, in the face of this so-called fake news phenomenon, they are trying to rebuild public trust in the truthfulness and the fairness of their journalism. But of course, the public doesn't see that. They see the worst of journalism, yes. Just as we all see the worst in the medical profession, the worst in the accountancy profession. It's that colours the public perception of the entire profession, no matter who it is. So the best have to go on doing their best, and the worst will go on doing their worst. And the problem is that the worst always outshines or outweighs the best in the public estimation.
Yeah. Look, unfortunately, Dennis, we're out of time. It's an appalling situation where people, and basically they're masquerading as journalists. They're not journalists because they're not abiding by, you know, fair and ethical reporting, fact-checking, and they're actually driving an agenda, which a commercial agenda in so many cases. I can't believe they don't realise what they're doing.
I don't know what they're doing, all right. Absolutely.
Well, yeah. And apparently they're quite well paid for it. I wouldn't mind some of the per diems that were claimed anyway.
Dennis, thank you for joining us.
It's a per diem. It's not nothing else.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what's up. All right.
Thanks so much, okay. Dennis. Appreciate your time. You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. I'm Macca and Paul. And our next segment, a trigger warning if I may. We're talking about a new survey, the Australian Child Maltreatment Study and the findings. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.